For anyone who's been in crypto for long enough, I mean, I remember when, for example, when Library was just like a larva state of a like a
Right.
shitty client type thing, and it just like then before you knew it, all of a sudden you had like actual videos and stuff, and there was a the ghetto looking, but still good enough like Library.tv, and yeah, and that they're sunsetting that one now. It's only gonna be Odyssey.com, right? It's gonna be Odyssey
Oh, they're
only.
going to get rid of library.tv.
Yeah, it's gonna be Odyssey, and then it's going to, of course, still be the decentralized client that actually works and stuff. So,
So
yeah,
they're going to be
it's.
pushing more of Odyssey and just library into back end.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a certain gulf between, like the ideal end user experience and then like all the blockchain first stuff. And so it's like, okay, well, in order to get mass adoption, we have to do a kind of a Coinbase type deal where it's like upfront, it's really user friendly, and it's not exactly, it simplifies a whole lot of things. But then, back end, like the hardcores can still run their full node. So, well, it appears we are live. So, hey everyone, I have the fantastic pleasure of speaking with my old buddy Chris Rice. We're gonna roll the intro graphic, and then we'll get going. So, hey everyone, happy Friday, and hey to my wonderful friend Chris Rice with his wonderful spectacles there, looking sharp, you're looking like you're about to pull me an IPA or something from a hipster brewery. So, especially
Oh,
with
that's
those cool
cool.
bricks in those background, are those vintage?
Yeah, it's a vintage tapestry.
Yeah.
But yeah. And these are blue light glasses that help me to not get headaches when I'm working on computers all day.
Yeah. Do you get headaches from that stuff?
As I've gotten older, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, unfortunately, it comes with the age. So, and I'm doing a live stream on my channel at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then I'm doing a live stream on John Claude's Beyond Mystic at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I just want to make sure I was good to go.
Yeah, just on everything, because otherwise that's a lot of streaming. I mean, I have not frequently, but occasionally had those days when it's been on shows for like 5+ hours straight, 5 to 8 hours of just like being on shows, and that's like, whew, that's all exhausting. Like that's.
Yeah, the most I've done on my own is three 2 hour live streams, so 6 hours in a day with like an hour between.
Yeah. That's a it's still pretty impressive. I mean, like it's kind of like the what do they say? Like the floor is open, right? Like right now with the crypto world, with the decentralized content creation world, anyone can kind of do anything. And so you gotta hustle. You gotta like scrape it from nothing to begin with. So yeah, output's kind of key. So before we dive into too many things that are too many specific things. If you look in the description, I'm assuming most of you guys would be watching on YouTube, for example. There's a link to the Odyssey live stream because we do live stream on Odyssey as well, which is the library-based front end that's all cool and awesome and stuff. And it's all always support. I'd always support, awesome free speech-centered blockchain projects before the giant Google megacorp that is YouTube. So if you want to jump in there's the link in there to join there. And then I also have the live crypto super chat thanks to CoinTree, where if you go to cointr.ee/thedesertlinks, as I'm sure you see on the screen right now. Of course there will be an audio version later and you guys won't know what I'm talking about, but that's okay. You gotta watch things live. If you go there, you can leave a little donation with a little message, and then it'll pop up on the screen live, and I'll be able to read that. So, yeah, and please make sure I don't have to screen them too hard. Don't like do like swear words or racial slurs or anything. Those have happened in the past, and that's never fun. So I do screen those. But in the meantime, right before we get started, I did get a donation a couple days ago. I did give a shout out on social media, but I just think it's interesting. Someone who watches my stuff, apparently their first Dash payment was giving me a couple bucks, which is very, very nice. And it does, that's kind of the reason why, I mean, I'd hope so, right? That's kind of the reason why we're all here, is to get more people using the new system, not the old system that people control, like the new system where you control your own stuff. And so, I mean, I could have 1.5 million followers. I could be making huge amounts of, you know, money or whatever. And it wouldn't really matter if everyone was just living their life like before. I want people to change their lives for the better. I want people to live free. And that's kind of why we're all here. So I don't know if you'd concur or if you...
I definitely concur. I love freedom.
If you're one of the bloody statists that doesn't... Or...
Yeah, actually, I was going to take this show to let everybody know that I have become a full-on statist. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, Catherine Peterson in live chat. I heart Rice Crypto. Well, thank you very much.
She's my media coordinator. I was just posting in a couple different groups that I was live on your channel. That's why I was looking downward. I'm actually retweeting your tweet with the link to the YouTube channel.
Yeah, retweeted to the tweety. And
retweet a tweet, yeah. So yeah. Just to do a little promo to get some people in.
Doing our best before Twitter starts censoring us and like blocking Odyssey. Like they started, this is a random thing that's not on our agenda. BitChute, right? I never got into BitChute. Library Odyssey first. That being said,
because I've gotten to know the people at Library, I really have a fondness in my heart. When all that censorship happened in Christmas of 2019, mm-hmm. They were there. And I really appreciate them. And I know it's a platform that I'm not going to get censored on. And I appreciate that more than anything. And I'm glad that Odyssey via mm-hmm. Library is offering live streaming. I can't wait till I can have that available on my channel.
Yeah, it'll be hopefully soon for everyone. And I'm pretty sure it was rolled out to just a couple of select creators. And going through the process, I kind of see why. It's a little ghetto right now. And no hate. The Odyssey guys are doing a fantastic job. And like all those weird little workarounds or like bugs and stuff, I'm more than happy to deal with them so we can advance this forward. So yeah, that's fantastic. And anyway, BitChute, Twitter is now blocking all BitChute links, period.
Well, it's because a lot of the people in the Alphabet movements are going over to that platform particularly. So, I mean, you're seeing a lot of the stuff that's being censored on YouTube and, you know, being, so it makes sense. But BitChute is not a decentralized content sharing platform at all. Mm-hmm. So for people to even think that it is, you know, I try to set the record straight when I started learning about file sharing and such, and not a big fan of BitChute and people that use centralized servers only.
Mm. Yeah. And I believe there is a semi-decentralized aspect to it from what I've heard. Again, I haven't done a deep dive in terms of the files are stored somewhere in a semi-censorship resistant way, I guess. But as far as the whole rest of the infrastructure, the awesome thing about using Library is like the content is stored in a decentralized way. The actual, like all the metadata and stuff is stored in a decentralized way. All your followers are decentralized. All your, you know, people you follow, all your channels, everything. So like if, you know, Odyssey gets hit by like a nuclear bomb, it's gone. You can still like boot up the old Library client and, you know, restore your wallet in there, and you have everything. You didn't lose your life's work, which is as a creator, it's a very scary thing. I mean, who cares if you keep all your videos online on YouTube if your channel's gone and people can't find it? Like if, oh, they're all still there somewhere, but like, and you can still upload and they didn't get deleted, but like your channel's gone, and like, who cares?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's most people who take this seriously, it's, you know, a form of art. So it's just very insulting all together. I mean, and when somebody puts all their eggs in that basket and then loses their channel and their videos, it's just, I can see where it's very heart-wrenching to people, which is a reason why I promote Library and Odyssey. And then I also promote hard drives and backing up your stuff too.
Yes. Official unofficial salesperson for hard drives. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Let's jump into some stuff. So first off, Bitcoin too big to fail. So Deutsche Bank now says that Bitcoin is too important to ignore, with a market cap over 1 trillion and a potential to grow of continued growth. So, well, first off, can you imagine? Do you remember the days when this was like a distant kind of like a dream, but like no one actually thought that this day would come when, whenever, when like the it's like, oh yeah, the banks first they fight you, whatever, first they ignore you, and now when the banks are saying it's too like too big to, basically too big to ignore, like
Yeah.
first off, how trippy is that?
It's pretty trippy, but it also is kind of alarming at the same time too, because you have all these institutions getting involved and it's like it's taking away from the everyday individual. You know, I mean, like it's getting to that point with the supply and demand now that Bitcoin's been out for, 11 years, that with the supply and demand and all the companies going up and buying up like basically more than the daily mined Bitcoin amounts, it's going to be really interesting to see how all this plays out. But what's really interesting about this article in particular is that it's Deutsche Bank. You know, if people aren't familiar with Deutsche Bank and what Deutsche Bank represents, it's Germany's largest bank. I still believe it's the world's largest derivatives holder as far as banks are concerned. It's pretty much insolvent. It's been downgraded in its status, but they keep it propped up because of the fact that it's one of these too big to fail institutions, even though it's failing. And it's really interesting to see, because me and you come from the same mindset,
Of
the
course.
be your own bank, get away from the bank. And when crypto, when Bitcoin first came out with the cyberpunk movement and the libertarians coming in, it had that mindset. Now you have like the Joseph Lubins and all these other different people, Ethereum and all these different organizations that are working with these institutions with the finance 1.0 to keep them relevant, when we should be trying to do everything we can to get away from them. But I mean, like, why do we need Visa to spend Bitcoin when we could just spend Bitcoin?
Yeah, exactly. So you're
It
not
doesn't
one of
make any
those
sense. Like,
like.
why do we need to keep having like a middleman being thrown into something that doesn't even need a middleman? The whole point of Bitcoin is it doesn't need that third party, that intermediary, that middle person to profit off of something. So it's interesting to think about, man. Banks allowing the custody of cryptos in the United States. I mean, what's going on with PayPal? What's going on with Coinbase going, with their initial public offering and things to that effect? I mean, it's a lot different than 5 years ago, 3 years ago. I mean, 3 years ago, we were in a sense, anything news related was affecting the markets. Now it's like we're getting some of the best news we've ever gotten, but it's not fluctuating the markets like it used to either. So it's it. And then we see the drive for the institutional investment, and we see the price going up and down and fluctuating. And on the weekends, when those markets are closed, the retail investors get involved, and we've just been seeing Bitcoin keep constantly hitting all-time highs. So it's a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, it's kind of a little bit of a bittersweet thing because like I remember, and of course, old school days of when everyone was like trying to, be like, fuck banks, we're just gonna use this for our money. And then now everyone's like, when's the next big bank gonna buy in? There's a little, and so I'm very much liking the kind of like expansion of to the mainstream. But there's always that little, like I was, sort of sparring on Twitter with some maximalist dude today who just like, just think like at some point Bitcoin's going to be just the money that everyone's going to use and no one will use fiat anymore. And I'm like, yeah, great. So what do you use your Bitcoin for? And it's just like, well, sometimes I buy some things, but like usually I just hold on to it and stuff. And
Right.
it's like basically, usually I just let my bank do all the talking for me. And I mean, that is a little bit of a particular problem, I guess. But there is also,
So for you with one of the things that I really like about you is how you unbanked yourself and you see the value in crypto for what it is. How do you feel now that you've been living unbanked on crypto and now the banks are coming to crypto?
Yeah, so
Are you going to get a bank account
no,
now?
because I mean, we'll see. The thing is, it just
I had to ask.
the entire thing is permissionless decentralized money that lets you live financially free, and it's just becoming easier now that more things accept and use crypto and stuff. It's because there's a lot of like normies that can't really get in the way I do. They can't really just live the way I do, and so it really helps, you know. And then there's a lot of people that just say like, oh yeah, I'm buying some and I got my little hardware wallet and I'm starting to stash away some stuff. But man, it would be really great to put my 401k into that instead of something else too, because that's, I already got a 401k, you know, and now they can do stuff with that, for example. So it's like just a good net good. But like for my life, it's been a lot easier. Like every year that passes makes it like less of a jury rig kind of to do stuff. There's like more ways
Right.
of using it. There's more things I can do with it. It's just getting better, and the technology is getting like less ghetto year by year, you know? It's actually like
Right.
working. So for me, it's like a net overall good. And at some point I have to sort of remind myself that this is not ever going to be the perfect global financial revolution we fantasized about. That at some point everyone's going to be using crypto, and that's going to be great. And a lot of the big crypto payment processors and other things will be owned by a lot of the same old players that were in the banking system. Not all of them, obviously, but there will be a lot of crossover. There will be like a shuffling. A lot of those bad people are going to go away in the shuffling. A lot of them are, the smart ones are going to stick around though and still be part of the global financial system. And a lot of people will still do like KYC and all this stuff on their transact. They still will report everything. There, you know, it's not going to be perfect ever. But the point is, it's going to be a lot easier because, like, I know people who lived unbanked or lived unbanked in back in the day without crypto, like just using cash and other weird things like that. And it's just like
Yeah.
there's so few of those people, and it's so hard to do that. And as long as there's a lot more people like that, and it's a lot easier, even if it's not everyone, as long as each iteration, each little revolution that goes over, as long as there's a lot of new people, there's a lot of really great people I know who were like crypto investors in like 2010 or something like that. And those people would never have had a seat at the table before. Now they do. And
Right.
so it's like the mainstreaming of crypto is, I think, only a good thing as a whole. And we just have to like realize that there's going to be some of the same old bullshit of the old system that will have
I
to come
agree.
along for it.
I agree. But since we're talking about this, just quickly, I'd like to say, we obviously see here in the United States and around the world, we're kind of pushing towards a cashless society. So as much as I love Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and would love to see the adoption of such and the death of fiat, we still need to have something physical that we can use. So I'm always going to be a proponent of being able to have that physical access and not going completely digital.
Yeah,
Because even with
there's
something
my
like
little
Bitcoin,
shiny rock, right?
yeah,
Just keep
that's the way to do it.
some of it just in case, right?
Have you ever seen these things called goldbacks?
Yeah, I have never had any myself, but I definitely know what they are.
Let's just show them to your audience real quick. But these are three different sizes for the different bills because each one has more gold. Each bill is like, this is 1/1000th of an ounce of gold.
Yeah.
So I'm a big proponent of, precious metals, even barter abilities, whatever it is we agree upon. But I don't like the idea of going 100% digital because the other, the on the flip side to that is, you know, you're seeing legislation being introduced with these hosted, non-hosted wallets, basically custodial, non-custodial, and basically having like a KYC custodial gateway wallet so that they can identify you and you could be taxed and all those different things. Those are the things that I am not a proponent of, obviously.
Yeah. So
I mean, going in that direction, I just don't think it's good to go all digital. And then if you look at the situations like with Texas, the power outage, could you imagine like if we were living in a crypto age and power went out?
No, that would be,
how would that work?
That's one of those things where like crypto is a great start to things. There's a lot of decentralization of infrastructure. Like, for example, people might not know this, but, or the audience might not know this, but when I was like a kid growing up on my parents' ranch, like a very small kid, we didn't have electricity. There was only oil lamps. And I remember when we got electricity, it's only because my dad, an electrical engineer, managed to set up like a solar panel system to, you know, basically run a small electrical grid on the farm back in the early 90s, right? So like way back in the day. And so like that's kind of my roots. And so today, that's kind of the stuff that we need to work on as well, is work on, like, for example, like, good thing to have stuff like Starlink, for example, to have easy internet access in more places and stuff like that.
Let's look at more decentralized things.
Yeah, of course.
Like Nexus. Nexus is working with Phantom Space Corporation. Jim Cantrell, who I just had on my show a couple of days ago, he was one of the co-founders of SpaceX. And Nexus, in conjunction with Phantom Space, is working to put low Earth orbit satellites into space and then use ground communications to create a mesh network, tokenized as well. So I've seen some information as far as some of the things are doing, but they've written their own operating system and such for the decentralized internet. So it's a lot more powerful than what Ethereum is talking about trying to do with the decentralized internet, because it's literally because with Ethereum's model, I mean, you still have a kill switch for the internet.
Yeah.
With doing something like a Starlink idea, but decentralizing it, I think is going to be a huge game changer and a big proponent for freedom. And I think that having something like that, especially when, you know, if you look at someone like Jim Cantrell's background, he's a libertarian. He's very, even though he's worked for the government and done work for NASA and worked in highly classified situations, he's so freedom-minded.
Yeah, and that's an interesting philosophical thing to do when you realize, when you embrace the concept of freedom and self-sovereignty, there's a kind of couple of approaches to take to in your life, and one is like ground up and the other is incremental from where you are. So the ground up thing is, you have some property in the woods and start like farming and, you know, chopping woods and having chickens and stuff. Like that's like from there. And then the other one is like, oh, well, I'm just going to start using Brave Browser instead of Chrome. And I'm going to use Linux. I'm going to, you know, do this. And I'm going to like buy from the local farmer's market here in town rather than the grocery store. And I'm going to spend crypto and get some crypto from Coinbase or whatever centralized kind of regulated entity kind of thing. But it's like there's those two different ways, and depending on who you are and what your kind of approach is, one might be more appropriate. But it's kind of like both is probably a good approach, because if you start from the wilderness, kind of, you know, like where no one can stop, like no one can get in the way, you don't rely on anyone, and you start just building up your whole life from there, I mean, that can be really rough. You can just spend a whole, like a decade working and just not even have like a life going. And then also, if you never go to that level, then you always have a little area of vulnerability. But I honestly think that that like 50% of the population using decentralized tech, using like Linux, Brave, crypto, like that kind of stuff, you know, pre-search, of course, things like that, is way more dangerous to the powers that be than 2% of the people living off the grid completely. Like, just
the combination thereof, though, too. I'm not sure if you've seen like Freedom Cells. It's something I'm trying to look a little bit more into, but Derek Bros has his It's like forming little micro communities and taking these micro communities and forming bigger communities and just networking and really doing things that are more self-sustainable and doing what you're saying, but not on an individual basis, but in a group basis.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think the combination thereof, because I've been looking a lot into the whole sovereignty, self-governance. It's been a big topic on the show.
Yeah,
for quite some time.
And that's the other thing I saw, like, just me in the comments says, no electricity affects payments in fiat as well, and you still have your phone. And that's absolutely true. That's one thing when people get a little apocalyptic, like, more so people who can't wrap their head around crypto, just say, like, what good is it when the power goes out? And when the power goes out completely, you got bigger problems than trying to buy things. Like the precious metal that I use for day-to-day transactions or the precious metal I recommend for when the power grid goes down is lead, if you know what I mean. Like, that's kind of like, you know, shit hits fan kind of level at that point.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So on that, continuing on that kind of thread, Morgan Stanley is looking into possibly buying exchange Bithum. Now, that was, of course, a big Asian exchange, I believe Korean exchange, that was, you know, had some crazy trading volume on it back in the day, I remember. And
they were one of the first exchanges, I believe, too, you know, after Mt. Gox.
Yeah. And it's another case of, you know, the big money coming in and not just, you know, not just buying, investing in crypto, but starting to acquire key crypto infrastructure. And it's like, yeah, at some point, I think that in the early days, I think if you just use crypto, it was like good enough, right? But then now I think you're going to have to be like, well, how do you use crypto? Like, what services do you use? And there's going to be a lot more discernment as far as, like, you know, because there's going to be some big players that will be basically owning a lot of stuff. And
well, I mean, it's happening. Yeah. It's been happening. Like, Coinbase has been acquiring multiple companies. I mean, you're seeing what normally takes place. I mean, that's why a lot of people kind of compare this to the dot-com bubble and what happened in the early days of the internet, because lots of people started websites, started businesses, and then lots of those businesses and websites were acquired, bought, and put into a conglomeration.
Yeah.
So it only makes sense. I mean, plus, I mean, you got to look at all the different things that, you know, I mean, as far as like what an exchange and all these different entities, the regulations and things that they have to go through. If you have an existing entity that's already gone through the majority of that stuff, it just saves you a lot of time. And time is obviously, from what I could tell, our most valuable asset.
Yeah, for sure. That's the one absolutely scarce asset we have in the world is time, our time here. But that reminds me of just watching. There's a definitely like an in crowd with crypto in a certain sense, where, for example, Digital Currency Group owns a ton, has their finger in just about every pie imaginable. And it's kind of like giant media conglomerates, like history repeating itself to a certain extent. And it's funny to see that I tend to be a big fan of big projects that are outside of the conglomerate, because there's a lot of projects that are in there, and it's not like when you have a completely decentralized, like structurally decentralized cryptocurrency, for example, it can still kind of rely heavily on the conglomerate for like their fiat on ramps or for, you know, other things like that. And so, like, that's one thing I like about Library, for example. As far as I know, Library is just kind of the little engine that could, just sort of doing its own thing, trying to free the world from censorship, you know, one big step at a time. And as far as I know, I don't see them, like, you know, being kind of the cool kids at the table, which of course slows adoption to a certain extent, but like, I don't see them being like bought and paid for by people, as far as like, well, they're going to only, you know, increase in a certain kind of direction. And it's the same thing with Dash for the most part. I mean, kind of self-control, self-owning, decentralized autonomous organization that now is starting to actually own staking companies. The decentralized network is, instead of the other way around. And so it's cool to see like examples like that of like being outside it, especially when you have people like, you know, I'm not going to dump on the Winklevoss twins too much, but Tyler had a tweet where he just said, like, not your keys, not your crypto is like bull, basically, because who here runs an email server, like their own email server and stuff. And I'm just like, oh, dude, it's like freedom's getting in the way of your bag, dude. Like, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
The wink will buy.
Yeah, and I think they're doing a lot of good for crypto, but I don't
trust them either. Yeah, but they're definitely following all the regulatory stuff. They're trying to be a part of that club for sure. As somebody who's looking to invest in crypto, if you want to look at, you know, what's going to work and what may be around and what may not be around, I would pay attention to what's being exchanged on Gemini.
Mm-hmm.
You got to also think Gemini never listed XRP.
Yeah, they were kind of ahead of the curve. And
never listed it. And XRP had a lot of volumes, so it would have been profitable for them to have done it. But they knew. They knew. So, I mean, they're ahead of it. So, I mean, that's why I would look at any of the cryptocurrencies being traded on Gemini as being something that you can consider to be a little bit safe from regulation in some sense.
Which is very odd that Zcash is on there. Because Zcash,
I thought the same thing, because it's privacy.
Yeah, and
but it's not anonymous. I think the Zcash, you can turn off the privacy aspects on it so you have that option.
Yeah,
it's not like Monero where you can't, and the only way that you can prove is to show somebody your transaction on, you know, through your wallets and such.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting to see, like, you know, who the cool kids are and who they aren't, like who's blessed by the powers that be, the crypto powers that be, and who, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a black sheep for whatever reason. And, you know, then on the other side of things, of course, you have the Craig Wright side of things, which is very crypto black sheep. But I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, if you know what I mean. It's just, you know, it's interesting to see, like, all these different, like, you know, humans are so dang tribal. Everyone's always in their little group of things, like, yeah, jockeying for power, and like, well, your thing doesn't, we got a thing against you, and like, it never ends, does it?
It's not just a crypto thing, it's a man and woman thing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It's a humanity, a homo sapien thing.
Yeah, and just like regulation, which, by the way, turns out Messari crypto, they predict that there's going to be a new wave of crypto regulation coming up. And I don't know, what's your hot take on that?
I mean, they're going to try.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be regulation. It's just going to just help them to identify for tax purposes and things like that, to make sure that nobody's getting away with something that they shouldn't get away with. Because I don't remember which country in Africa it was, but recently there was an African country that banned Bitcoin, and they're having a dire situation with their fiat money. And the people ended up just like kind of going ballistic, not causing riots or anything, but going to other nations, neighboring nations, and getting Bitcoin, bypassing the fiat system. And the African nation ended up having to say, we're going to rescind that and we're going to allow. So it's going to be real interesting. You know, when you have all these different financial institutions getting involved in Bitcoin the way that they are, with your MicroStrategies, your Tesla, your PayPal, your Cash App, mm-hmm. all these different companies, and how much capital that they're putting into this. And then you have the regulatory side. They can't really like screw up those rich guys either. So there's going to have to be a happy medium, but those rich guys are totally cool with paying taxes because they know all the loopholes to get out of paying most of the taxes anyways.
Yeah, they're good with paying.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I think the regulation is just going to be more for just like trying to make chain analysis a lot easier. I'm not a fan of the Lightning Network, and I've explained mm-hmm. to you before, you know, I feel like it's just a centralized way of controlling and identifying a decentralized currency.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like those methods that are helping to identify what you do. It's already pseudo anonymous. It's not completely anonymous. So the things that we can do to protect our privacy, I'm always going to be a strong, you know, proponent of.
Yeah.
And the things that take away that privacy, I'm obviously going to be strongly in opposition of.
Yeah. Which is a great example. The great example of all this is at the end of last year, as I'm sure everyone in crypto was freaking out because Was it FinCEN was proposing the self-hosted wallet rule, as you alluded to earlier, about trying to put some extra onerous regulations on exchanges and people withdrawing to wallets that they control that are not custodial. And
right, so you couldn't send if you have an Exodus wallet, mm-hmm. you couldn't send that straight to an exchange. You would have to use a gateway wallet that has mm-hmm. a KYC identifier. So
yeah.
So if you use Coinbase and you buy any cryptocurrency on Coinbase and then you transfer it to a decentralized wallet that you have your possession of your keys to, mm-hmm. they know it's your wallet.
Yeah.
So it's as many things as we can do to have that privacy and as much anonymity as possible. I don't like the idea of this surveillance state that we're going towards. And that's ultimately what I think the regulation is going to be about, surveillance and ways that they can control and tax.
Yeah. And so look at the interesting thing that happened with that. So they proposed these kinds of regulations with a very short period of public comment over the Christmas break, Christmas New Year's break, right? Which is very, very shady stuff. And this was done by the Trump administration, right? And mm-hmm. then Square Crypto, or actually Square itself, like not even Square Crypto, but like Jack Dorsey's company, Square, the payment processor, came out against it. It was like, this is terrible, this will, well, and all this kind of stuff. And after the administration changed, they ended up sort of like quietly getting rid of this proposed rule change. Like they ended up just...
Well, it just hasn't been mentioned as much. I don't know that it's gone.
Yes, I read some, again, maybe I should actually do my research for the show.
I don't think they're going to want to push a Trump initiative, so they'll just rewrap it is all they'll do. But it's not the end of it.
I think it's very telling that, obviously Square, Jack Dorsey, Twitter, right? That whole combination. So Twitter, in my view, had a lot of impact on the last election and in favor of the current ruling party. And so I think that's a kind of communication from them saying, look, this regulation, the way it's structured, is going to mess with our business. We did you a favor. You do us a favor, and kind of make that quiet. And at the same time, notice what Jack and Square Crypto and all those people are big into is Bitcoin, BTC, and Lightning Network specifically. Now, you can't live off of Bitcoin. You can't spend in, it just, the fees are so insane. Transaction times, right. You can't just do that. You need to do it through Lightning, which kind of turns into more hub and spoke type models over time, at least it would appear. It's still too early to see. There still needs to be more people using it at all before we know how it turns out. But think about this, like Square is the payment processor king, or one of them. They are banking on crypto, but they're banking on crypto that goes through them. And so that's why they're so big into Lightning and things like that. And apparently, I guess the way the regulations, the proposed FinCEN regulations were phrased, it would have harmed their business. And so they say, no, go back to the drawing board. Now, if you come out with new regulations, they got to be in a way that works out for us and our business interests. And so it's kind of like that middle of the road type thing where like you have like the Winklevoss twins and the Jack Dorseys of the world and all them doing a lot of heavy lifting for crypto, moving it forward, and at the same time moving it to like a midway point between where we are as a financial system and where we'd like to be. And so,
but it's also a little bit confusing as well when you have former Fed chair, now Secretary of Treasury, Janet Yellen, who's mm-hmm. completely against Bitcoin. So, and that is a very high position to be in charge of the U.S. the U.S. Treasury. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this administration plays out, because it's not as if everybody's on the same page.
Yeah.
So whatever, may be happening with Cash App and greasing people's hands, obviously, I don't think Janet Yellen is privy or a part of any of that either. So because she's not a fan of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
At all.
Well, that's one of those ways where cronyism can be a good thing is when it sucks. But like, it's good when you owe something to everyone. And that's how you get into power. And your administration is filled with just random people who helped you out, kind of random people you owe favors to. And those random people, a lot of them probably see the writing on the wall of the death of the fiat system and have crypto. And a lot of them also probably are bankers who are, you know, and so basically everyone's going to be pulling in a million different directions, and that kind of limits just how bad things can be. But
yeah,
as I mentioned earlier, and you didn't, and of the way regulations can go in a bad direction, of Free Talk Live's host, Ian Freeman, and some of his colleagues were arrested earlier in the week. And that's because they ran a cryptocurrency business, or cryptocurrency ATM and local Bitcoins type trading business. And I believe, you know, obviously it's hard to tell exactly, especially when the information source you have is the government, and, you know, we can't really trust them to tell the truth 100% of the time, right? And so it seems like they were not doing required KYC on customers and stuff like that. They were operating a peer-to-peer more or less environment, and yeah, the government does not take kindly to that.
They said they were operating without a money transmitter license. And and I told you I wasn't very familiar with this guy, but I wanted to highlight it because I like the fact that they were trying to do something outside of the system and not follow regulation, because, you know, obviously, you know, if you want to operate in the United States, the majority of people are following regulation.
Yeah.
And you mentioned this is one of the earlier people involved in the Free State Project as well. Now, the one thing I want to say is, as far as since I've been involved in Bitcoin early 2017, I've heard of a lot of people that have gotten arrested for the same charges using things like localbitcoins.com and other methods, but not having not using a money transmitter license and also giving them money laundering charges as well.
Yeah.
I've not seen anybody successfully get out of that at all. And I've seen a lot of cases happen. Unfortunately, and it goes back to, if you want to operate in the United States, I'm not a fan of what I'm about to say,
but it's a necessity, right?
It's the truth. If you want to operate in the United States, you have to be compliant with all the regulatory requirements, or otherwise you're going to have a situation occur like what's happening now. So it sucks. It totally sucks.
Yeah.
But there's the United States is such a monster that I don't see why someone would think logically that they would be able to do this without there being some sort of consequence to the actions. I commend his actions, but it's like, you had to know. He had to know.
Yeah, I think he probably did.
When you play with fire, you're going to get burned.
Yeah, and
whether you like to play with it or not, it's the burning part's still going to hurt.
Yeah, and that's obviously there's a lot of speculation at this point, even though it's a person I knew personally. From what I've known about Ian being a trendsetter, but he's the guy who his radio show introduced Roger Ver to Bitcoin. Period. He heard about it on there. Was it 2009, 2010? It's like that's
straight up OG. Yeah,
and so, OG. Like, I don't know if we'd be here if Roger had not gone on to kind of thrust Bitcoin forward through all these investments and startups and stuff like that. Like, I don't know if I would have. Maybe I'd just be now finding out about crypto. Like.
Yeah, but the funny thing about that is Roger Ver is doing everything under all of the regulatory compliances when it comes to his investments.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, he decided to expatriate. I'm not going to go into his personal situation. A lot of people know about the expatriation.
Yeah.
But so he is a little bit of a rebel. But at the same time, when it comes to what's important and the things that are going to affect his life, he realizes he has to follow those methods. So,
yeah.
I mean, because we know that he was an early... When a lot of people refer to him as Bitcoin Jesus, it's not because he was just preaching the gospel of Bitcoin. He took his money and seeded and helped start up lots of different ventures, and he's got involved in a lot of different projects. I know he was an early investor with Coinbase. He helped to get Ripple off the ground as well. So yeah, he's a big proponent of Dash. So I mean, and with all the stuff going on with XRP, do you hear Roger Ver's name being brought up in any of the litigation?
Yeah, no, definitely not.
So somebody's doing, so it's like if you're going to go on that route, unfortunately, you're going to have to play it the right way. Anybody who's not done it, and like I commend them all, but it's still, there's consequences to actions. Bernard von Nothaus, another person, he was challenging the US dollar by having the Liberty dollar. I think that was a precursor idea to cryptocurrencies. I think, they kind of, what Bernard did was very hand in hand in what Satoshi did. Except for Bernard was a person that could be attacked and put in jail. So, are you familiar with Bernard? Not
Yes.
Bond? I know. It's okay.
Yes, I'm
Cool.
familiar with that case. It's and I think that other cryptocurrencies have had public founders because Satoshi is not public. Like, because now the cat's out of the bag. You're like, well, I'm just open sourcing his code and it's fine. It's like it because of
Well,
that
Charlie
it,
Lee's another good example too. Look what he's done to
yeah.
separate himself from Litecoin as a develop as a creator developer.
Yeah.
Because, had he not done things like that, there could have been issues where Litecoin could have been in a same similar situation as Ripple is and XRP. So, you got to look at what people have done with their actions. Now, in a way, Charlie still got to keep the majority of his Litecoins. He just transferred them over to a nonprofit. So I mean, it's just knowing how to navigate the waters.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see a lot of this stuff, especially because the old system was so rat like the old days of crypto was so radically different from the old financial system. And there's still origins of those two systems clashing today, like the kind of like the after effects. Like, for example, how many people do you think there are that like now are trying to become like legit with their crypto? They're like, hey, I got all this crypto. I want to like report this stuff on my forms. How do I do
Well, it's
that?
like, how do,
Because I've
if you
had it
have
for years
millions,
since before this
right?
was
If you
even a
have
thing.
millions of dollars in Bitcoin, how do you get that into dollars without complying with the things that you're supposed to, like paying your taxes on your tax on your capital gains and all that kind of stuff? It's, that's because my girl gets on me about it all the time. Like, you need to sell your Bitcoin. I'm like, what the fuck am I gonna do with it? Put it in my
Exactly.
bank account?
Well, yeah, so that's a it's gonna
Just so
be
they can. So they can take it from me
it's gonna be
or freeze
interesting.
my account and say I owe the IRS money or whatever the situation might be. So it's just like,
Yeah.
yeah.
It's a little sad to see like people with the glorious early days when people just sort of like did what they want because this stuff had no value. And then there's a lot of people that now it's like, oh, now it has value and now I'm scared because I was just playing around with this stuff because it was nothing. And now it's like I gotta figure it out. And I think that with like mainstream adoption stuff, you're gonna basically see the death of that kind of a person who like, for example, like minted thousands of NFTs and just like traded them all over the place, and it's like, yay, I got all, I got all this like stuff from that. And then now people are going to go back on every one of these stuff and forensically find like, oh, who made a bunch of money from that? Oh, let's see. And then,
Yeah, there's a mutual friend of ours who's big into NFTs, who likes to brag about the money on a public forums and stuff. And I'm like, dude, you need to chill the out, man. Shut up.
Yes, shout out to you know who you are, right? But it's exactly one of those kind of
The CEO of
situations.
NFTs. That's about the only thing I'll say.
Yeah. So it's kind of been interesting to see this sort of turning over the system from like this stuff was no one could do anything with, and then now everyone can do stuff with, and you're starting to see like the friction between the old system and the new. And I don't know. I mean, I think that well, on the subject of NFTs, why don't we just like pivot to that? So, first off, what do you think of NFTs, just generally speaking?
I mean, I've been saying this a lot on my shows. I think they're one of the ideas in blockchain and cryptocurrency is going to bring about a lot of mainstream adoption and a lot of use cases. The use cases that NFTs can bring are just limitless. I mean, when early Bitcoin people were thinking about the idea of color coins, same concept, just having a digital representation for something. And not using necessarily a cryptocurrency in that aspect. You're using non-fungible tokens. I like the idea that NFTs can help to change the ticket industry with all the counterfeiting and resales. Because another cool thing of the NFTs, depending, like, let's say you use wax, you can have a resale set to go back, a portion of that sale to go back to the creator. So that way there's always going to be an inflow of money going back to the people that it needs to go back to versus just a bunch of scalpers profiting off of. I also like the idea of taking certificates and licenses and things like that and putting them in the form of NFTs. So I just think that, you know, we're seeing a lot of stuff being talked about with artwork and gaming and things like that, but there's so many different other use cases that can be brought with NFTs that I think are going to be just a huge game changer.
Yeah, and that's one thing I think is very interesting. Like, I first saw NFTs and I was like, like, what? I was looking at them a little bit skeptically, and then I saw the crap being done with them, and I, you know, reserved judgment until I looked into them enough and I got it. They're like, oh, this is actually going to be huge. But like right now, what was that?
Sorry. I was going to say, one of the really cool things I saw early on was like a Digibyte has the Digi assets, which are basically NFTs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people take Divi nodes and put them, the representation of ownership in an NFT and take and split up a master node between people using NFTs. So it's pretty wild the way that you can, and, you know, you can also have audio, you can have moving files. So I've seen, it was one of the guys from Bad Crypto's son, Zach, I think it's Zach Combs, I think it's Joel's son, has a podcast that's, he puts on a wax NFT. So you can actually listen to the podcast on the NFT. So that's a really cool idea. Songs, Kings of Leon, put out NFTs for their album. So now the cool thing about that, that's a big game changer, is like for someone who purchases music via a streaming service or something like that and buys a song for 99 cents. When you buy it, it's your song.
Yeah.
That's it. You can't do nothing with it. Let's just say I got tired of it and don't even want to own it no more. I can just delete it and that's it. But if it's in the form of an NFT, I could actually sell it to somebody. And then somebody who wanted to buy it for 99 cents can now maybe buy it for me for 50 cents. So I like the idea of being able to take items off of the platforms and utilize them. That's another cool thing when it comes to gaming, is imagine that you could take your in-game items from one game and use them in another game, or just being able to get rid of them on a third-party market that has nothing to do with the gaming system. Because like you can, I'm not big in gaming, but I've heard of people doing things and building up characters, getting weapons or whatever, and then selling it.
Yeah.
But they just have to sell the whole account.
Would be nice to sell.
You could just transfer an item. Yeah. So it's kind of cool. I think it's really cool. You know, I'm a big fan of like going in the digital direction. I'm just not a big fan of going 100% digital. I still think we need to keep a little bit analog in our world.
Yeah. And so that's going to be, there's a lot of interesting applications for NFTs. I think that NFTs right now are like collectibles. They're kind of like NFT for NFT sake. And I mean, there's a lot of crap out there. Most of them there are complete crap, which
cash grabs,
which is fine because it's, I see it as like a playground. Like you're just,
it's capitalism. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just playing around with it until you find what actually sticks. And so for example, I think a lot of the old school blockchain will do everything talk about like digital records keeping as far as property is going to be instead an NFT, rather than have like the this and such blockchain is going to record everyone's like driver's license, where like you get a driver's license NFT that has a little like, you know, driver's license, like in a 3D, 3D thing spinning around, you know, it's like one of those. And so, you know, like a lot of certificates will be probably NFTs. And I think, for example, like, if Tesla isn't on this already, I mean, they're too busy selling an NFT of a song about an NFT, which is what Elon's doing for like $1 million or whatever. But I think, imagine you got your Tesla and your title to the Tesla is just an NFT. and the title grants you access to actually the car. And so you can mint like other access tokens, but like the NFT is like your ownership of the car is what lets you use it. And there might
Oh,
be,
that would be cool though. So you give your daughter a token to be able to use the car.
but it caps out the velocity at a certain amount or whatever. It does a bunch.
That's
It's
pretty neat.
like a,
Yeah, I like that
yeah.
idea.
So I think there's going to be a whole lot of NFT physical like combinations where you have like
And
a.
I think too, when we talk about tokenizing stocks, I mean, I think that NFTs would make more sense for the tokenization of a stock versus something like Ravencoin, where you can just create your own cryptocurrency that would represent the stock. The NFT, I think, serves a better purpose in that aspect.
Yeah, I think it could definitely work like that. And there's also an interesting thing where, like, as you mentioned, like the selling your entire game account, for example, is a real thing. I know a lot of people who have been.
Yeah, World of Warcraft. I know a lot of people
Yes.
made decent money, like harvesting gold and selling their accounts.
Which is pretty funny because like in the most one of like those like early education things on crypto, a friend of mine in back before around the time when Bitcoin came out maybe, but before anyone ever used it, he was mining gold on RuneScape because RuneScape he would be able to mine, he would just have his character mine the gold, but he was like doing school, he was doing martial arts, he was doing a bunch of stuff, so he didn't have time for it. And if you had like a bot script running, then they'd ban your account. So he had a little mouse events bot that would literally move his mouse, go click, 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 click. And he was literally mining gold, kind of like mining crypto over and over, like that. And so, anyway, the virtual world is going to become, I think, as important as the physical world to a lot of people. Like right now, there's a lot
Yeah.
of the real world has the upper hand, but there might be more of a 50-50. And so,
No, I think a lot of people hate reality, man. So I think a lot
yeah.
more people would be more apt to have the virtual augmented reality world where they could sit at home and live the life they want to live, and and just end up being some big fat blob in a chair that can't move.
Yeah. It
Sucking
what's
and eating through a sucking or drinking and eating through a straw, because it's
Yeah, and
just too much
I think
physical
there will be
intensive
some
labor.
people. There will be some people. I think there will be a lot of people who have thriving real world lives and also have thriving digital lives, and when they make a purchase, it's going to be like a free NFT with your Happy Meal, right? Like almost anything you get is going to come with an NFT that unlocks the item in a digital world. Like, so for example, you buy a cup of coffee and it comes with an NFT. So you're drinking your coffee in the real world, but you got the digital coffee as well for your Sims character, whatever else they're going to have in the day.
At your avatar.
Yeah. And so there's going to be just a lot of these like pairing of both things. Like say maybe I buy the Doge pillow I have here and it's fine, it's fun here, but it comes with a Doge in the virtual world as well. Like the NFT associated with that is also grants that item in like the virtual world. So like there's only 10 Doge pillows they ever sell and I get one of them. Not only do I get the real physical pillow, but then I get the thing in the game where now I got my Doge that I'm running around with. It's like, oh, he's one of those guys. When you see the Doge running around, it's like that person has the pillow at home. It's like,
That's cool.
though that
I mean,
stuff.
dude, there's so many like loyalty points. Bad Crypto were doing proof of listening, because they were really big proponents of the NFT movement early on. So, like basically they would do a show and they would give away NFTs for proof of listening to the show. I mean, it may not have any actual value at all, but it's just kind of a cool little keepsake that you can have. And then now I've seen these digital frames and things where you can take your NFTs and you can put them in digital frames, almost like you can do with digital images, with GIFs and with JPEGs and things like that.
Yes, which will be the next addition to the office here for sure, is going to be an NFT digital frame that I will be like user directed to a certain amount. Like,
The CEO of NFTs told me about a really cool one. I just can't remember the name of it offhand. If I remember, I'll send you the information.
yeah, I mean, obviously, that would be the industry expert on the subject. Now, let's hit I wouldn't say the dark side of NFTs, but let's hit the challenges. So, an NFT, right, is a digital token that just, it's like a digital coin that has some metadata attached to it. And it, I guess, on its own, it has no value unless you care who created it. And it just, what is it attached to is kind of like, so for example, an image. Now, a lot of times you have an NFT issued where the image it references is uploaded on a centralized service. And so let's say you buy an NFT, it's like you own it, but the image that it references is on a centralized server. They can just shut it down and you have an empty NFT now. You have an NFT that references nothing. Or I believe there was some artist who deliberately did that for to prove a point, and he changed the art into an image of a rug in a literal rug pull after the fact. Like just to show, like, yeah, you think you're buying this, but you're not actually buying an NFT. Like, and so, and then there's other, I mean, obviously the smart kids are trying to do it on IPFS to where it's like a decentralized storage actually for that. But then what's the gateway to that? And is that going to change? And then what if it's, the way it works? I'm not a huge IPFS expert, but like, what if someone stops, hosting or seeding it and it dies out and then it just doesn't exist anymore, even though it's a decentralized network? And so that's one of those things why I think one of the biggest, I guess, who's not in the NFT game necessarily, but library would probably be the ultimate NFT factory or platform, because obviously they're already creating scarce digital things that people own. Just being able to transfer ownership of content is the one thing that they're missing, I think. But they already have
Yeah,
the
that'd be
blockchain.
awesome if we could tokenize our channels and I could and let's say you quit being a content creator, I could actually buy your channel from you. You could transfer me the token.
And even if
That
you
would be pretty
even
cool.
if you never do anything on the channel, you just keep it, being like, I'm the guy who owns this piece of history. And
Now, with Library though, Library is a code fork of Bitcoin. So I'm not 100% sure how that would work out. It would be kind of like the color coins in a sense, but I don't know. It's interesting.
As far as the actual blockchain itself, obviously it's a Bitcoin fork with some extra data attached to it for the claiming process. Now the actual blob files, as they're called, that are pieces of the content that are all shared across all the library nodes. Like, for example, when you run the full library node, the full client, you're seeding content that you've watched is on your hard drive to everyone. And so it's kind of like it already has that blockchain plus storage all-in-one solution with a naming system. And all I need is to be able to transfer files from ownership. Right now, they're attached to whoever uploaded them, whoever claimed them. And then whoever has a higher claim amount just gets the location in the search, right? Who gets the actual name but doesn't actually get the files. So it's just kind of a, there's just like a couple things left. And that's the thing, is like NFTs we're in like the ghetto stage of NFTs right now.
Very much, yeah. I mean, when we start seeing some blockchains that are being utilized more universally, instead of it being kind of the wild, wild west, we can see verified users. I think that we can see a difference and change. The idea of being able to take artwork that's not yours and sell it, I think that that's not necessarily cool. That's like copying somebody's concert shirt and selling a counterfeit version of it. So I think once we get to like some form of like being able to have like verified stuff to where you know that even though there may be some other art coming out from Banksy, if it's not from verified Banksy's account, it's not really a Banksy piece. It's a counterfeit. It's like your Gucci's and stuff. And that's another cool, thing that NFTs can do. It's helped to identify real actual items for authenticity.
And verify who
Like
they came from.
what so like if a Gucci is really truly a Gucci, if a Rolex is really a Rolex, you can have an NFT attached to it and you could be able to verify it in those manners. I think that would be a really cool thing. Baseball cards, all that, your grading of your comic books. And that's the other thing too, comparing that, a lot of the NFTs when it comes to art is going to be just like comic books and baseball cards and things like that. They have a value, but it's only perceived value. So I don't know the actual price, but let's just say like the number one issue of Superman is going for $1 million. Well, someone who doesn't like Superman, doesn't care about Superman, doesn't care about comic books, that's not going to be worth $1 million to them. You know, so that's kind of in a way like how NFTs, like artwork, can be looked at as well.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, like we have Garbage Pail Kids, we have all these other different companies like Topps producing NFTs. You can have a fake wannabe Garbage Pail Kids come out, but I know that the real Garbage Pail Kids stuff is on wax. So I just think once we have those identifications and those universal blockchains, and because we're still not really, it's so new to the NFT stuff. Like we had Cardano hasn't even really issued them yet. There's going to be a lot of blockchains that are going to issue NFTs. I'm a big fan of Engine and I'm a big fan of Wax, but I'm sure we're going to see a lot of other platforms coming out that are going to be just as innovative as well.
Yeah, that's for sure. There's also one of those things that I think is going to be very important for the future of this whole ecosystem is decentralized digital identities. Because right now, you have like a wallet and
DID.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, no. So
obviously there's a bunch of different ways of cracking that, but like right now you have a wallet and you can kind of verify ownership from the wallet. Now, the problem is a lot of these systems like an Ethereum or another, they're not UTXO based cryptocurrencies. They're account based, which means you don't have multiple addresses. You have one address per account. And that means if someone sells you an NFT, they can see the other NFTs you have at that thing and maybe decide to rob your house and like steal your stuff from it and stuff. There's always those weird privacy issues.
That's the problem with the CEO of NFTs. There's a an application called Token.
So much shit talking about this mythical CEO figure. I love it.
Right. So I had to do it though. Mm-hmm. There's an application called Tokenhead for Wax blockchain, and you can put in a Wax receiving address and you can put in multiple accounts and you can just look at all the NFTs that these account owns.
Mm-hmm.
So I have, let's try to see if I can, yeah, I can block the picture here, but let's see. Is that coming up clear yet? Do you see that dollar amount on the bottom part? Is it clearing up?
Maybe take it a little bit further away. Let's
see. So the top one is my account. I'm trying to pull it back. I think that's worse.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's Oh yeah, I see there that. Oh yeah, that's a chunk of change.
Yeah, so that's the CEO of NFT's accounts. Mine's a top one.
Yeah.
It's like 3,600.
Hey, CEO, you better get your gats right now because someone's going to bust down the door, rob your house any moment.
Yeah, so I mean, I know everything that he owns. I mean, that's where the pseudo anonymity comes out, because I would never have known that had. Oh, this is kind of cool. I'm looking through his NFTs and there's a NFT that uses a Coco Pele in their logo, which I have a tattoo of.
Nice.
They're called Tribal Books. There's all kinds of NFTs, but I'm really stoked with a lot of the ideas that blockchain and cryptocurrency are going to bring with these creative destruction and disruption of various industries that definitely need to be broken up.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's going to be very fascinating to see how the space evolves in the future. We're hitting the stage where it's more than we ever thought. We just thought, what if we had digital money that no one could censor? Which is a great place to start. And then now it's just like, okay, well, censorship resistant YouTube. It's going to be censorship resistant everything, which is already beyond our wildest dreams. But then it's going to be everything we didn't even dream of before, that no one did before. And as always, with that reminds me of like all the Ethereum hype from back in the day, which, you know, Ethereum's done a bunch of really cool shit. Let's be very honest about that. And also people were at one point saying, everything's going to do a smart contract. Your toaster's going to do a smart contract. It's all going to do. And then we realized that all this awesome stuff has limitations and it's all still in the rough and there's scaling problems and other things. And, you know, slow down a little bit. But I think we're going to be living in an unrecognizable world in the next 10 years. And most of it will be for the better. But maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm just, you know...
No, think positively, man. We got to manifest a better future for ourselves and for humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That seems like a great place to conclude on. It's shilling time, Mr. Rice. What are you going to shill for us today?
I don't call it shilling, but I would definitely encourage people to check out my channel. Yes. I rebrand it from Rice Crypto to Rice TVX. You could probably still find me under
what is
Rice
the
Crypto.
X? Is that because it's dirty?
No, well, extreme. There was multiple reasons, but there was already a Rice TV, and it's
probably about rice bowls and stuff like that. But
I don't think so. I just think it's an Asian thing. But so I didn't want to be confused, so I did the Rice TV X. Plus, I mean, just the whole X thing is just like getting away from the norm.
Yeah, so. It's extreme. It's like TV, but it's extreme.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I feel like my channel, like I put out a lot of good content, but I don't grow as much as I think I should. I think it's just because I'm abrasive sandpaper.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not for everybody, but now obviously I cover cryptocurrencies, but for, I mentioned the sovereignty stuff. So anybody who's interested in learning about the idea of freedom, independence, sovereignty, self-governance, studying law. I've been looking into those things because I'm looking into ways to be able to take the jurisdictional power from the governments over me that they have, and reclaiming my sovereignty.
Yeah. So basically it's the red pill, the rice pill.
Yeah. The ultimate rice red pill. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I cover economics as well. And, I do cover some spirituality. So there's a lot of different things on my channel, but it all is encompassing under the umbrella of freedom. I also have a Patreon channel where people can get early access to videos, and I post up exclusive content. And that's Rice TVX as well. And pretty much all my social media is Rice TVX. So I would just, if anything I've said during the conversation resonated with you and you'd like to learn more about what I do and discover.
Yeah.
In the cryptocurrency element, I mean, I've interviewed a lot of pretty important people. You can see some really cool interviews with people like Charlie Lee, Charles Hodgkinson, Roger Ver, Fluffy Pony. Had a lot of really good conversations. I've had Andreas Antonopoulos on a couple times, Max Kaiser on a couple times. And then I'm interviewing people like G. Edward Griffin and immunologist Professor Dolores Cahill, who's speaking out against the pandemic issues that we got going on. I'm trying to be careful with what I'm saying so I don't cause you any issues.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm trying to cover a lot of different ground, but the different, and when I cover cryptocurrency projects too, I'm trying to find projects that are going to help in the elements of freedom and privacy. So you'll notice that's a common theme. And I don't just chill for the sake of shilling.
Yes, that would be our friend, the CEO, maybe. But man, I hope he doesn't watch this. It's going to be funny to see all that. But yeah, so
I'll send him a link. You should book an appearance on the show.
Yeah, I did. And then he got too high and he forgot. And he was looking up Joel Venezuela instead of the Desert Lynx or whatever. And anyway, stuff happens.
He was looking for Venezuela, Joel
Venezuela. I mean, it must have been a good nug that he got into there. So I'm just saying. So anyway, all this stuff is on, all your stuff is on YouTube and Odyssey/library. And what else? Just those two mostly?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I've got the audio podcast. It's hosted on anchor.fm, and it's available on all the major podcasting platforms at Rice Radio. So Rice Radio for the audio, and then Rice TVX for everything else. Now, Odyssey and Library, I can't change my channel, so it's still Rice Crypto. So that's how you'll find me there. But I do post up extra content on Library and Odyssey, and the reason I do that is to encourage people to check out those platforms.
Yeah.
So I definitely encourage people to check me out over there. I'm trying to grow my base as much as possible. I'm about to hit 2,500. Maybe I just hit it today, but 2,500 followers, which I feel is an accomplishment on Library.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty crazy. I mean, I believe
You're doing better than me on Library.
Yeah, that's because I didn't have a YouTube at all until like a few months later. And then the only reason my YouTube channel ever passed 1,000 subscribers very recently is because that was the only thing I could share to do the live stream stuff. But now, like, as soon as Odyssey's live stream becomes like publicly available and much more reliable, and as soon as it's smooth, then like my YouTube channel is going to stagnate because it's going to be nothing there for, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm going to get to the point where, I'm going to be limiting what I'm putting out. I might put clips out and get people to watch the full videos on other locations. So, and then if I'm going to be sitting here taking bong hits and drinking, I may not do the live streams on YouTube. I may just do them on Odyssey, where I can have more of a unfiltered conversation and not worry about any issues, because just like, you know, because this is on YouTube, I got to talk about alphabet stuff when I'm trying to refer to a certain group. And I've got to talk about, I've got to censor myself, unfortunately. And I'm not a big fan of that.
Well, better on your terms than not on your terms, right? As long as you have an outlet.
Yeah, but it sucks. I mean, self-censorship, it's just, it's almost worse than being told.
Well.
But I get it. I get it. So. I appreciate you inviting me on your show.
Yeah, no problem. So everyone watching, like, comment, share, subscribe, all those things. But specifically, watch on Odyssey. Follow the Odyssey channel. Digital Cash Network on Odyssey, on Library.
Digital Cash Network.
I got it.
On Odyssey.
Yes.
And Library.
Yeah. And I will see you guys next week. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and donate to support the show by going to my Cointree page. That's cointr.ee/thedesertlinks, and leave a message with your donation. Check out the show's sponsors. Live on crypto with Bitrefill. Buy absolutely anything with crypto with Shop and Bit. Avoid content censorship with Odyssey. Protect your privacy online with NordVPN. Get paid to search with Presearch. All links are in the show notes.